Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up today on the program, our buddy Brady Henderson from ESPN.com, who covers the Seahawks for ESPN, will join us at 3 o'clock. We've got the professor, John Clayton, at 4 o'clock. We'll talk some Mariner baseball with our Mariners insider, Shannon Dreher, at 5 o'clock. So stay tuned for all of that. Want to get people involved today. Dave, you're not on Twitter, so you don't see a lot of this stuff. You'll see it on the text, and people can text in 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. But what, on the heels of a disappointing postseason, once again, it's been disappointments for, you know, since, what, 2014, and obviously that was a big disappointment too. But they're either losing in the wild card round or the divisional round. That's the trend every year. And a lot of people, I'm sick of it, tired of this, and I always refer back to what Groz would always say: don't get tired of winning, don't get tired of winning. What kind of game are you expecting? You know, things like that. And then, you know, it's everybody points to the other teams in this division. Go, well, look at the Niners, look what they did. Look at the Rams, look what they did. And I'm like, yeah, you know what they did? They took face plants.
Right.
They had those seasons where they were where they had no hope. So week in, week out, as a fan, you were parking yourself in front of the TV, going, all right, let's see if they can get something done today or if there's some ray of sunshine. I mean, dreadful seasons for all three of those teams. You haven't had that with Pete. So what you have had outside of the first two seasons, which were 7-9, is a winning season every year, double-digit wins every year except for one when they went 9-7, and playoffs every year except for two under Pete Carroll.
Right.
But we're to the point where that's no longer good enough. So my question for people, and you can text in, we'll open up the phone lines coming up. Would you be willing to suffer through a season or two like that, the way these other teams did, to allow yourself an opportunity to build through the draft instead of trying to find free agents and re-sign free agents and go out and take somebody else's player? You'd have a chance at a Bosa. You'd have a chance at a, you know, if you needed a quarterback, a Kyler Murray. You'd be in a position to draft players of that caliber.
Right.
That's the payoff. Seahawks are always drafting in the bottom, often trading out of the bottom of the first round, but picking in the bottom of the first round, people don't like that. They don't like their first picks, and that has merit. There's truth to that. They have not done well with these early picks often. So would they be willing to make that sacrifice as a fan to take a face plant for a season or maybe two and rebuild through the draft and have a top five pick, have a top 10 pick? Would they be willing to? Because if you're sick of this, if this is boring to you, or you're just done with this, that's your alternative. There are a lot of fan bases that would absolutely kill. They would eat their young to be able to be in a position that the Seahawks are in, year out.
Well, and let's look at who else is in that category. You're talking about Green Bay. You're talking about Kansas City, New Orleans, New England, certainly, Baltimore. I mean, yeah, those are the teams that, you know, are perennial winners. They've been able to do it. And to me, this also really speaks to how good John Schneider has been because – yeah, they don't pick well in the first round, but their first-round picks are low anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, look when they got Russell Okung at number 6, and then that same year they drafted Earl Thomas, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I think he was 15th or something
14,
like that.
14, 15, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then,
Pete's first year.
Right. It was the first year, and they were 7-9 that year and went to the playoffs, which was a weird thing. And Pete answered a lot of questions about that this year because the NFC East was that guy. They were that team. So, and then you had Carpenter picked at number 25 overall. And again, this goes back to Clayton's little stat that he had. And I can't remember over the last maybe 10 years, but 21 through 32, you're not making it to a second contract. And that's exactly how it played out, right? Carpenter, you know, Kristen Michael, he was a second round pick, but
their first overall pick that year.
Yeah. But Jermaine Effetti, you know, Rashad Penny, we'll see. I mean, I'm not very hopeful with him.
Before we move on, have you cooled on him a bit? I felt like I was debating you and Jim before. You guys were much more pro Penny, and I was more of the, I don't see it, or I certainly haven't seen it to this point. Have you cooled on him a bit?
What, a little bit, just because of the injuries, because you don't tend to get healthier. you know, and then how you come back from injuries is another thing, you know. So, but yeah, Penny, and I think a lot of people still can't get past the Nick Chubb thing, who was a second round draft choice. But
it does hurt to see it.
It does.
Because same position, you know, exactly the same position, and that guy was there for you, and you elected to go another direction.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, you look at what the Niners did. I mean, I think it was kind of easy when you're picking, you know, fourth, fifth, ninth, seventh, you know, because they tanked there for a while. They, you know, weren't able to perform. But, you know, and this is the good news about Schneider is that he is much better. He's had a much higher hit rate in picking in the later rounds. And that's how they've kind of filled their – was it Will Blackman, I think, that we had on, or somebody like that, and he was saying, yeah, that they're really good at filling up the back end of their roster. And when I say that, I'm talking about a guy like L.J. Collier, but not a first-rounder. I mean, he needs to, you know, play a little bit better. Like I said yesterday, I feel like if L.J. Collier, who was the 29th pick overall, had the kind of season that he had this year, his rookie year,
feel a lot better about him.
You'd feel good about him. But second year, so he's just on a different – you know, program. He's on a different pace. It takes some guys, you know, and for me personally, coming back my second year, because he had a very similar rookie year to my rookie year. I had 3 tackles in 4 games,
mm-hmm.
and I guarantee you they were jump on the pile type of tackles. Yeah. I don't think
you
I
relate
had
to the party.
Yeah, I don't think I had a solo tackle by any means. So
a jump on the pile tackle. Yeah, you get credit for those?
Yeah, we used to call that JOP. And we would always kid each other. When I was in Denver especially, Mecklenburg was like the biggest wise guy ever. Like he always had comments. You know, he had a nickname for everybody. And I'm like, I go, you have nicknames for everybody, Mech? And he goes, yes, Jane.
Jane?
Yeah, Jane Wyman.
Oh.
Was Ronald Reagan's wife. So, yeah.
Oh,
but, I mean, he would always be like, yeah, J-O-P, J-O-P. But, yeah, I mean, that's like, hey, it counts as a tackle. But, I mean, that L.J. Collier had that kind of year. But then he came back, and, you know, his second year, I think he was okay. But, I mean, look, if he's picked 5 players later or 6 players later and he's in the second round, you'd be like, eh. Yeah, it's okay. It's pretty good. You think? I mean, would you feel better
about it? Yeah. I think there's just something to being that team's first pick, whether it takes place in the first round or the second round. This is our first choice of this entire draft. This is right. The guy we've prioritized above all else. And then when they're kind of players, and as I've said, L.J. Collier to me he's a guy. He's not a Pro Bowler. He's not a guy that they count on. He's not a difference maker. He can make plays. We saw him do it here and there. Not often enough for my taste, but to me, I look at him and I said, Rasheem Green, a third-round pick. I go, they're guys. They're part of your rotation. Right. They're part of your depth.
But and look at this. I mean, you know, then your question is a good one, Bob. I mean, in 2007, they're 10-6. In 2008, 4-12. 2009, 5-11. And, you know, the 2009 one yielded them Russell Okung and Earl Thomas. But mm-hmm. the one before that? You got Aaron Curry.
Aaron Curry.
Who's a pretty good coach on the staff.
Yeah.
He's a linebacker coach on the staff. But, I mean, he was the number 4 pick and did not work out at all. So even if you do tank and you pick somebody in, there's still a chance that, you know.
You blow it.
It's a much higher hit rate. No question about it. Like, you know, my guy Devin White, who I just, you know, love watching. I think he was either the 7th or the 9th pick overall. So, yeah, you get a higher hit rate there. But – you know, even if you do tank it, and I don't think anybody's, you know, tanking except for maybe Doug Peterson at the end there. And then he didn't get even rewarded for that. But, you know, he put in the 3rd-string quarterback and they got the 6th pick instead of the 9th pick, right, was what the thing worked out. But, you know, I mean, you're not necessarily trying. I guarantee you Jim Moore was trying to, in 2009, get them to a better, you know, somewhere better than 5-11. But if it does happen that way, I mean, do you want to go through that? I mean, and look, it's been, I mean, 2017, everybody was miserable.
Well, I'm looking at 16 right now. Seahawks won the division that year with a 10-5-1 record. All of the other teams in the division were losing records. Cardinals were 2nd at 7-8-1. Rams were 4-12, and the 49ers were 2-14 in 2016.
Right.
This is on the heels of them going to a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, again, talk about taking a face plant. So brutal season as a fan. I can't imagine, you know, sitting in front of the TV every weekend feeling like, what's the point?
Yeah,
they're going to get worked. They're a terrible team. You know, you're looking ahead to the next season already before you get to the halfway point of this season.
So the question would be then, do you wish that the Seahawks had gone? Now, it doesn't matter for them, right? Because they don't have first-round draft choices for the next couple years.
Yeah.
But let's say they did have one. Would you be okay? Would you have rather they went 4-12 this year rather than 12-4? Because you're just going to lose in the first round anyway, so
yeah.
Who cares? But to me, I'll take the winning, you know, and put yourself in the moment. You know, you look back now, it's easy to, you know, 2020 and say, well, yeah, it didn't work out. But at the time, felt pretty good. I mean, I predicted they were going to be 13-3. And here they start out 5-0, and I'm thinking, I think I might be right.
I think
they might actually make a trip, you know, have a vie for the Super Bowl, possibly get to the conference championship game. And, boy, it just ended so horribly. But again, you know, I just think it also speaks so much to the way that how John Schneider has drafted, how he has traded. I mean, he's been aggressive. He's been in on everything. I mean, the Dwayne Brown, that was, I mean, we forget about that trade. That was a pretty aggressive trade right there.
It was needed.
Yeah.
It was needed. I mean, you're protecting your franchise quarterback with one of the best left tackles in all of football. They made a huge deal for him. They made the deal for Clowney, who played really well in his 1 year here. They've done well with taking what are perceived to be disgruntled players from other situations. Marshawn Lynch, the best case example, not considered a model citizen before he came here and was not coveted in this league. You know, Buffalo was done with him. They took a chance on him. He turns into one of the greatest members of that franchise. So they've done really well in that. And people are texting in 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. And some may have tuned in late because 509 is saying, why is Bob even entertaining the idea of tanking? We win on a consistent basis and make the playoffs almost every year. You're right. I'm not saying you go out there and tank it on purpose. I'm saying for those that are sick of winning 10 games, 11 games, 12 games, going to the playoffs and getting bounced in the wild card or the divisional round, which I get. I'm tired of that too. But here's the trade-off. And they lament what the 49ers have been able to do when they draft guys like Bosa and Kinlaw and get all this talent through the draft, and the Rams get this guy and the Cardinals are getting this guy. All of those teams have eaten it. I mean, I just went through that season where the 49ers had 2 wins. They were 2-14 in 2016. The Rams were 4. Every team in the division was a losing team except for the Seahawks. So I'm not saying you tank on purpose. I don't think they did either. I'm just saying, would you suffer through a season like that or two to be in the same position as some of these teams are now with your younger players who are cheaper and they're not having to build through free agency as much as a team like the Seahawks who have picked at the bottom of the first round basically every single year? I think the highest pick they've had in the first round with Pete is Bruce Irvin.
15th.
Outside of Russell Okung the first year.
Yeah, right.
So they got that based on what the previous coaching staff did,
right?
So they got those draft picks. They made those. But under Pete Carroll's watchful eye, if you will, based on the success or failure of his team, the highest they've picked is Bruce Irvin at number 15.
Right.
Everything else is 27, 29. Now they do trade down at times, trade out of the first round. But they're just never in a position to be one of those teams to grab a Bosa, to grab a Hopkins, to grab some of these guys that other teams have been able to land.
Right. Well, and then remember, the once they started getting the guys, and Bob Condotta and I wrote about that in that book, If These Walls Could Talk, about how once, you know, when Schneider started to get and Pete Carroll the players that they wanted, and they were quietly hitting grand slams with guys like K.J. Wright in the fourth round, Richard Sherman in the fifth round, you know, Bobby Wagner even in the second round. You know, I'm sitting here looking at, you know, going back, looking at all the records, and Pro Football Reference has, which is not Pro Football Focus, it's just Pro Football Reference, where they have all of the stats of everything. They have top players, and so they have top passer, top rusher, top receiver, and then they have AV, which is like it's a rating that they have of, you know, how good the player is regardless of position. So, and you go back in this Pete Carroll era, the AV, top AV guys are Richard Sherman, fifth round, Russell Wilson, third round, Bobby Wagner, second round. So, and then leading passer, of course, is a second rounder. Leading rusher, Carson, seventh round, seventh rounder. So, and then, you know, the one guy that's chalk is Marshawn Lynch. I mean, they traded for him and everything, but I mean, he was a first round draft choice. And then you go back and look at receiving. Was Locke a third rounder? I know they moved up to get him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Metcalf was a second rounder. He's, you know, this last year. And then Baldwin for 4 years is your leading receiver, mm-hmm. who was a free agent. So, I mean, the way that they've been able to do it, absolutely, it's, you know, and they've been in it. It's just, like, here's a newsflash. It's hard to make it to the Super Bowl. It's really hard. And that's why that is such, you know, still, every time we talk about Super Bowl 49, I swear to you, I get, like, a sick pit in my stomach thinking about it. And being around, I'll never forget you came up to me because I did post-game TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I did pre-game TV, and I was outside, and I got sunburnt.
Yeah.
So my face was red. But then I remember you said, like, you looked really mad. Like, your face was red.
You looked
I'm
really
like, yeah,
angry.
I was sunburned, but I was really mad because, I mean, I just couldn't believe it. I'll never forget when that interception happened. Max Strong and I were going down to the field, and I turned around, and we went to the stairwell real quick to see what was going to happen because we had thought, oh, well, they'll get it in there. But we had to be down there in time for when the game ended. And they threw that pick, and I turned around, and there was this lady with a Patriot jersey, yeah. and she was jumping up and down in front of me, and I was like, oh, my gosh.
And you tackled
I
her.
I got to get out of here. So, but, yeah, I mean.
It was me.
It was Mara. I went, yay!
No, she was way shorter, Mara, way shorter. So, yeah, I mean, look, they've done such a great job of, you know, filling those guys in, and really, John Schneider just being more aggressive than most and going and getting. And I know that Quentin Dunbar is, you know, that didn't work out. But guys like that they went and got, they were very aggressive. And, of course, the Jamal Adams thing. And, again, we talked about yesterday, no combine. Mm-hmm. You're guys in college playing very few games. And, you know, would you – I just think the two first-rounders, I'm taking Jamal Adams.
Oh, yeah, I'll take – bird in the hand.
Right.
Bird in the hand. Because draft picks, as you pointed out with Aaron Curry, I believe that was a consensus pick. I don't recall, and you tell me if I'm wrong, I don't recall anybody going, what are the Seahawks doing here?
Yeah.
Who is this?
Nobody.
That was the reaction when they drafted James Carpenter.
Yes.
I think Nick Saban was going, wait, what?
Yes.
Who? He did he play for me? I mean, that was the reaction to that pick. Aaron Curry was a guy that was universally thought of as a game changer. So I don't recall that being a reach or that's just bad luck. That's what happens.
Yeah.
Right? It's you see it every single year. That's Dustin Ackley. Dustin Ackley, nobody was panning that pick. Nobody was saying, what do you think in Mariners? It just didn't work. So, yeah, there's certainly no guarantee to picking that high.
And especially not this year.
Yeah, this would seem in terms of evaluating talent, even using as much as I say the combine is extra. To me, the interview is the most important part of that and the game tape. Those are the two things I would think would be most important. And you've got such little game tape on some of these players. Well, some teams play 11 games. Some teams played 6 games. Some teams played 5. Some guys didn't play. I mean, so, yeah, this is a really, really weird offseason for the scouts and the evaluators out there.
Yeah. Well, and I think the scouts will tell you this. And, you know, Schneider, remember the story I told about how Danny took his rental car back one time and it had, you know, like 500 miles on it or something. And there was a bunch of, you know, Red Bull and stuff. Like the guy was going and looking at players. And I think that also those scouts will tell you, you know, you're talking about being at the combine and then being and interviewing him and then looking at the film. Mm-hmm. They want to be there at the game.
Yeah.
John Schneider will go to games and he was on, he was down on the field for the Rose Bowl. And that was when I think it was Oregon played Wisconsin. And he saw Russell Wilson firsthand. So, and it wasn't just, you know, him out on the field. It was how he interacted with his teammates and, you know, what he did on the sidelines and all those things. All of that is gone. All of it is gone. So, yeah. And then if we can just go back to Aaron Curry really quick. I watched him play at Wake Forest.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the Butkus Award winner. And it was like, even that, there was, to me anyway, nothing to indicate that he wasn't going to have success at the next level.
Yeah, no, but I don't recall any criticism of that pick when it was made. None.
Right. And so I did notice when he got in camp and stuff, he wasn't very good at zone coverage. But once he got in the game, the one thing about that dude, he was so physical. I remember counting. I think there was either four or five guys that year that he hurt his rookie year. One was a tight end. Two were guards. And then there was a couple of running backs where he would hit them and they would get up very slowly. So he had that. You know, he had the speed, everything. I mean, he was just one of those guys that just came down the middle of people. But he just could not play.
Yeah.
And so that's your number four pick. So, I mean, look, like you said, even if you do have that tank season, which nobody's, you know, obviously everybody's trying to win. But if you do have that, even if you do have a top 10 pick, I mean, sometimes it's Russell Okung. And, I mean, Russell Okung was really – he was good.
He was a good left tackle. Yeah. He had issues staying healthy, but he was very good.
Right. And then Earl was, you know
– he's great.
Hall of Fame material, possibly. I don't know. But maybe we'll ask the professor about that. I don't know if we've asked him about Earl and if he's
– I'm sure we have at some point, but we'll refresh everybody's memory. You guys can text in, and we're going to open up the phone lines here in a minute. And 206 just nailed what I was going to ask on top of this. And he or she said, great topic to start the show, guys. I'm for suffering through a few losing seasons because I'm not very hopeful about this team as it is. That being said, if that happens and they land picks in the top 10, and here's what I wrote on our sheet, can Pete and John be trusted not to botch the picks for the possible trade backs? You know, food for thought. So that was what I wrote on our notes last night, saying if you are willing to suffer through those seasons, where's your level of trust in these guys to make the right pick? Because as I've documented there, they've struggled with their very first overall picks for the most part. So we'll get to that in the phone calls coming up right now. Let's take two.
Take two.
Philip Rivers has announced his retirement from the NFL after 17 seasons.
He lasted about 15 seasons longer than you thought he would, right, Dave?
Exactly. We'll get to that later. We're going to do a little bit of a story time at 3:45 about him. But again, I'll miss him. You know, I always said that I didn't like the way he talked and the fact that he didn't swear. Jake was making the case that he admired that. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, he certainly has more self-control than I did when I was a player.
He's a good villain.
The filth that came out of my mouth on the field, I mean, forget it.
He's a good villain, though. Good guy to sports hate. By all accounts, a great person, great individual. But on the field, he was a good guy to hate.
Well, which is pretty – that's how you should be. I always say that, you know. And I always kind of panned Philip Rivers a little bit. And I really panned him in 2004. We'll find out at 3:45. But yeah, I mean, he's you're right, a good sports hate guy, and that's how you should be. You should be a good guy off the field, which he is, and then on the field, you can be a little bit of a villain.
Gary DePoto gave us an update on Mitch Haniger yesterday.
Sure. Mitch looks great. For those of you who follow Mitch on social media, you know, the posts he's made, he looks terrific physically. Our assistant hitting coach, Jarrett DeHart, went and visited Mitch live and spent a little bit of time with him and came away gushing. How good he looks physically is the takeaway.
So weird that he's become kind of an afterthought in the excitement about their up-and-coming youth. I mean, their outfield looks set with Kyle Lewis, and you've got Kelnick coming up at some point soon, and Rodriguez is your highest rated young prospect, and you're like, oh yeah, Mitch Haniger. Before he got hurt, he was the closest thing this team had to a five-tool player.
Right.
I mean, he was a fantastic player, and that injury, man, it talk about lingering and leading. I mean, it went from being hit in the junk to he's got back issues, he's got core issues, he's got so many things came as a result of this one injury, and you kind of forgot about him.
Yeah.
So,
well, real quick, we'll talk to Shannon later on, but at 5 o'clock. But he said the easy identification is when he's healthy, he's our best player. That's quite an endorsement there by DePoto.
Yeah, and he's not wrong. All right, coming up, we're going to open up the phone lines for you guys. Want to get your thoughts on that. A lot of anger out there, a lot of frustration with the Seahawks' inability to get past the early playoff rounds, whether it's wild card or divisional. So are you somebody that thinks, you know what, this is great, but I would take a losing season or two in order to get those draft picks and build through the draft? Are you that, or are you somebody that says, you know what, give me the chance every year to be in the playoffs. Give me that shot every year. I'll take it. No losing seasons outside of the first two under Pete Carroll. Are you happy with that? Your thoughts are coming up. 421-3776, toll-free 866-979-3776. We come back with your phone calls next on Wyman and Bob, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Phone lines are there for you, Seahawk fans. 421-3776, toll-free 866-979-3776. We're playing the hypothetical here, Dave. This is a hypothetical question. This isn't based on reality. We understand they don't have first-round picks this year, next year. We're just pretending it's a normal year. They've got their full complement of picks, in any year, for that matter, in the Pete Carroll era. Because the question is based on people being really unhappy with the fact that they get bounced every year in the wild card or divisional round, even if they win 12. We got a lot of texts like, regular season doesn't mean squat if you're losing in the playoffs. Doesn't mean anything. I get that. I understand that. I'm tired of losing in divisional wild card as well. But your alternative is being like the other three teams in this division. We can go through year by year, and I pulled up 2016 or 2017, where every team had a losing record except for the Seahawks, and the 49ers had a two-win season. So my question is, in order to get where the 49ers were expected to be before injuries, which is one of the elite teams, to get guys like Bosa, get guys like Kittle, get guys like Kinlaw, you have to eat it for a couple of seasons. I'm not saying you tank on purpose. That's the other thing, is people say, well, if you're thinking of tanking, no. Just hypothetically, right, would you have rather it instead of take 16 as an example, instead of being 10-5-1, would you have rather they were 4-12 that year, right, and got a really high draft pick, and instead of being a winning team every year and going to the playoffs virtually every year, there seems to be some people that are fatigued.
Well, and the other thing is, if you have, I was on a 2-14 team, Bob.
That must have been fun.
Yeah, and if you're that bad, things have gone horribly wrong.
Yeah,
and it was ownership in that case when Ken Behring came in, and you know they drafted Dan McGuire, which I always hate saying anything negative about Dan McGuire because he's such a nice guy, really was just a great guy and a great rookie and everything. But I mean, he couldn't play at all.
Yeah,
at all.
But he was really tall.
He couldn't play at all, Bob. Yeah. I mean, I was watching him in practice, throwing him into the dirt, you know, every day. So, and by the way, everyone thought that drafting Aaron Curry was a game changer. Yes. Nobody. Yeah. I mean, look, maybe there was one person that saw something. But, I mean, look, those are the kinds of things that you just, you know, you have to go back and put yourself in that situation. He was the Butkus Award winner.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there were so many reasons why.
Nobody looked at that pick as a reach.
No.
Nobody, I don't recall. If they did, I forgot it, and I apologize to that analyst. But I don't recall it. It seemed to be a consensus. Absolutely, you're silly if you don't take this guy. It didn't work. All right, 421-3776, toll-free 866-979-3776. Let's start in Snohomish and bring in Rocky. Rocky, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good, man. What do you think?
Hey, I think it's kind of silly. We're the Seattle Seahawks, and we want to win every year. We have, I will comfortably say, top five quarterback in the NFL. I think the window is now. I think that's why we pay John and Pete good money, is they're very creative in late-round draft picks. And we're competitive, and we set the bar for everybody coming in to play at the facility. So, you know, one thing that's guaranteed is Russ. You have Russ right now. Mm-hmm. That's a guarantee. There's nothing guaranteed in draft picks. So that's where I stand. I'll make it short, and love the show, guys.
Appreciate it,
thanks,
man.
Rocky.
Thanks, Rocky. That opens up a phone line, 421-3776, toll-free 866-979-3776. And he's right. They do well in the late rounds. I guess the question for those that are of the opinion, yeah, I'd take a losing season or two to get those draft picks. Do you trust John and Pete to make the right pick? Because we've talked about it, even though they're later first-round picks, their hit rate isn't great with their first overall picks, wherever those land. It's not great.
Right.
Head to Bellingham. Brad is here. Brad, welcome to the show.
Thank you, gentlemen. I personally don't think that there's any problem with our personnel. Yeah, we could use another lineman, offensive lineman or two. But with what we have right now, I think we've got plenty of talent to take it to the limit. But the OC, I've felt that was a problem for a long time because Schottenheimer, he couldn't adjust. I use a good example, Cleveland against Pittsburgh. They used the short pass like a run. and they just ate Pittsburgh up with it.
Mm-hmm.
There, I went back and looked at the games that we played this year, and there was hardly ever a five-yard across the center pass. The receivers weren't even looking for the ball until they were 10 yards down the field. And that means that the play was not a short pass. Why didn't Schottenheimer, was it Schottenheimer or was it Carroll?
Yeah, well, I think it was Schottenheimer. And
thanks, Brad.
And I think
Brad, that's on Russ, too, though, not checking down like a lot of quarterbacks do. Those may not have been the first reads for Baker Mayfield, may not have been the first reads for Tom Brady all those years, but he would go through his progressions and, all right, I'm just going to take what they're giving me, and that's the stuff underneath.
Yeah. Well, and I think Brad did a good job of describing kind of what we've been talking about, that like when the receivers are ready and they're open, he's not looking, and when he's looking, they're not open. And so, yeah, I mean, look, you saw a lot of very simple plays from Green Bay against the Rams that got, you know, just a throw, you know, a one-yard throw out to the sideline. Receiver gets 5 yards, you know, and then if he breaks it, he gets 9 or 10 or 11, you know, and you didn't see that. And that's always been something that, you know, that the timing has been off as far as, you know, it just seemed like every team they played, they coordinated perfectly the pass rush with the coverage. It's like the coverage was tight early on, and then here comes the pass rush, and Russ is looking down instead of looking downfield. He's looking down at the ground.
Quickly, let's see. He's on I-5. Gabriel's with us. Gabriel, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. I'm actually from Battleground, but I came up to Renton to take a journeyman plumbing test today, so I'm in the neighborhood.
All right, well, good luck on that test, man.
Yeah. So anyways, I think we need to stay the course. We don't need to blow anything up. We don't need to do any tanking or none of that. If we just use our second-round draft pick to get an offensive lineman and pick up a couple more in the draft and maybe via free agency. But if Russell Wilson had time to throw the ball, and if we had holes for Carson and Rashad Penny to run through, Brian Schottenheimer's not drawing enough wide receiver screens for DK Metcalf to end up getting turned into a pick six. If Russell Wilson has another split second to hold the ball and let DK Metcalf get into his route, he's not rushing his throw and overthrowing him, was it right before halftime or right after halftime? He threw over to Ted because he had to rush his throw. But if we just address the offensive line through the draft and through free agency, give Russell Wilson literally another half a second to a second for our receivers to develop and get into their routes, and Russell Wilson not rushing his throws, he's going to throw the ball on target and hit the guys in the number rather than throwing high or throwing low.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. Appreciate the phone call, Gabriel. And again, good luck on your test. You can't disagree with that because we saw how well Russell functioned for the first half of the season when he had what felt like an eternity back there, when we thought the line was playing really well in terms of their pass protection, right? We remarked about it every week, it felt like. He was just, you could see him going through his progressions. You could see him just standing there, patting the ball, looking. Okay, there's my guy. He had all that time. The problem was they never adjusted to what was happening with the line. All right, now I don't have as much time. How do we tailor this game plan to fit what's not happening up front? These have got to be quick hitters. These have got to be a quick swing pass or a quick slant, whatever it is, something to adjust to what was then happening because it was different than the first half.
I think what you can explain from what we saw from the offensive line, they looked not sure. They looked not confused necessarily, but just not confident in what they were supposed to do. And that had to do with the flow of the play calling, and I'm not just, you know, heaping it all on Schottenheimer because he's gone, but, I mean, it looked like there was some confusion there. And when you're not sure, you can't play.
Yeah.
You can't play. You have to have the confidence to know what I'm doing, exactly what I'm doing, and be purposeful about it, and you did not see any of that from the offensive line in the second half.
All right, coming up, we're starting something new today, Dave. It's our Seahawks free agent countdown. The Seahawks have, I think, 24 unrestricted free agents, and then a couple with some other designations, but a lot of guys that are potentially gone. So we're going to kind of go through each day. We're going to look at two or three of them each day and talk about, all right, should they stay or should they go? What is your hope with this player? So we're going to work our way up to the more prominent names as the days go on. So we'll take a look at a few guys coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wyman and Bob present the Seahawks Free Agent Countdown.
Hey, let's go! Let's go!
A deeper look at the Hawks free agents and the implications of re-signing each one.
Once guys kind of earn their way with us, you know, and they become part of the spirit of how we do things, then they are always our guys. We got a little bit of a soft spot for our guys.
Now, here's Wyman and Bob.
There it is. How about that? A new open for our new segment. We're going to take people through this free agent roster for the Mariners, for the Seahawks. They've got 24 unrestricted free agents. 24. So we're going to go through a couple of names each day and just give you some thoughts on whether we think they should stay, whether they should go. But it's just some of these names you're going to have to help out with here, Dave. Because we're starting with the lesser known guys, and we'll work our way up to the, you know, KJs and Chris Carsons and things like that. But today, and more, I don't, for whatever reason, the sound sheet's not there, so maybe you could play the sound from in there if you've got it, perhaps. But we'll take a look at some of these guys, starting with, I already know how people are going to feel about this name. Lano Hill is a free agent. Lano Hill is a guy that has hung on longer than I will say I give him credit for. I thought he would have been gone because I just don't think he's been very good. I think he's had moments where you could be sort of teased by some production he had, but overall, if you're just giving him an overall grade in his entirety, it's a D+, perhaps.
I never experienced what you would hear from down there and what Pete would say about Lano Hill. Like that year where they were looking for safeties, and they had Tedrick Thompson,
yep,
and Lano Hill. First of all, I remember this, that he could have played corner, they thought, that Lano Hill was possibly, and it was Delano back then, and he changed it to Lano, even on Pro Football Reference. So, but, yeah, I mean, the one, I guess, highlight, he had a fumble recovery, you know, one year in 2018, an unrecorded interception on a two-point try against Pittsburgh in 2019. But you just always heard that. And look, you know, when Pete Carroll, who has coached DBs for a long time, says Lano Hill is a very talented player, I have a tendency to believe him, okay? Mm-hmm. But it just never materialized out on the playing field. It just didn't. And I think Pete would tell you that.
And here's Pete back in October talking about Lano's most recent injury. And we must be muted. Hang on. Let me get to that. But he...
We're looking after him right now. He's not ready to come back yet.
You know, dealing with back issues.
Yeah. Wasn't there a montage that we had or somebody had of Lano Hill injuries? I think it was.
I think that was ProSize.
Oh, that was ProSize. You're right, Maura. You're right. A similar type of thing. But yeah, with Lano Hill, it was just the hip. And it was never, you know, it was never very clear and that he took a big hit or anything like that. I loved Lano Hill personally. I mean, he had one of the greatest laughs I've ever heard.
Yeah.
So.
But if we're just doing this, looking at each one, they're going to stay, they're going to go, he can go.
Yeah.
With all due respect to him, not a personal thing. We're just looking at the roster, looking at who's a free agent, who they should make an effort to bring back. And he's not somebody I would say make an effort.
Yeah. So third round draft choice, and that didn't work.
Didn't work out. How about this name, Demontre Moore? And here's Pete Carroll talking about him.
This is a guy that plays with what we would refer to as a great motor. He plays so darn hard. It's why Larry Izzo, you know, had him back, I think, in his old Giants days on the kickoff team as a defensive lineman. For specifically that to happen, I mean, he knew in his back. Larry had been talking about it for a long time that this guy, if we keep him out there, he's going to make a play. And sure enough, that was just a total bolo shot. It was so exciting to see that because that was at the end of the run of all that stuff that had happened. Anyway, so he's doing a good job. I mean, he plays really hard, and he's got it's really about his special effort that he has that he gives us.
Demontre Moore is a guy I'm guessing most fans couldn't pick out of a lineup, and didn't have a lot of time out there on the field. He's not somebody you could – I have a hard time evaluating who he is because I just didn't really see him. So as far as is there an urgent need to bring him back, he's a depth guy. He's a guy that you have just to fill out the roster. So
and he runs down on kickoffs.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look, that's a D lineman running down on kickoffs. I really treasure guys like this. I mean, I'm not saying you break the bank to get Demontre Moore back because then he got suspended for, you know, some kind of a substance thing or I don't know what it was, but – You know, and if we ever get to doing the football 101 this week, I had him in a play that I thought was one of the most inspiring plays of the season. And it was a 3rd and 4 where he ran down Adam Thielen and just nailed him. But he was on the opposing, you know, not numbers, but, you know, hash mark on the other side of the field.
Mm-hmm.
And he sprinted his tail off to go and intersect Thielen and keep him short and set up a 4th and 1. That and he had some other plays, too. I think at the end of that game, he also had a forced fumble. Yeah, the one that KJ recovered, remember?
That was more than
against
time?
Minnesota.
Okay.
Yeah, and he forced that fumble, and remember they blew it dead, and KJ picked it up, and they went and reviewed it, and that was
but
a forced fumble.
Is that what you rely on him for, is just the special teams guy? He's a defensive end.
Yeah.
They needed help on that line. He wasn't part of it, if we're being honest. So, yeah, special teams, he seems to have some value. If we and again, we're determining they stay or they go based on who they've been with this team.
Well,
for me, I look at him and say, you could find another DeMontre Moore to play special teams.
Well, I think he's – look, I'm not saying pay him a whole bunch of money. I'm just saying this is a guy that you want on your team because of how he hustles. I mean, and on every play, and that play – and I saw him do that a lot this year. He showed up a lot. Now, I'm not saying – you know, just like you said, Bob, he's not a starter. He's a back-end roster guy. He's a guy that you put out there – for, you know, to spell somebody 20-25%. Because I'm not sure he has the talent. But, I mean, when you have a guy that hustles, if everybody on their defense played the way he does, they would have been the number one defense by far. So, I mean, I just value guys like this. And he's willing to run down on kickoffs, and he hustles. Who were we talking to? We talked to somebody. Maybe it was Ben Burkervin. Or, no, it was Jason, the kicker.
Oh, Jason Myers.
Myers.
Yeah.
I promise I'm not doing that on purpose because Jason Myers is a kicker. But he actually talked about DeMontre Moore and watching him because I said, like, who are the cover guys that you like watching? And he goes, DeMontre Moore, man. Guy's 265 pounds, flying down the downhill, down the field. I mean, this is an effort guy. And
okay.
I just think he's a, you know, not a priority, or you don't break the bank. And, if you know, you have a certain amount of money you're going to pay him and somebody, you know,
and you've got limited money to spend salary cap-wise, so they've got to make some tough choices here.
Yeah, and maybe he wants to come back here and play here, but I'm just saying, it's when you see a guy like that who is that much effort, that is contagious, and that's somebody I think you want on your roster. I like DeMontre Moore.
I'll defer to you on that one then. So he stays, Leno goes. We got one more here for today, and we'll do this each day as we go through the list and chip away at it, and again, we'll work our way from some of the lesser-known all the way up to the more obvious names. Jonathan Bullard was a guy we saw out there a bit, heard his name a bit. Here's Pete talking about him.
Jonathan, you probably don't know as much about. We have some background with him. Clint coached him a while back, and so we have some inside scoop on him. We're excited to see how he fits into the rotation. You know, if you've noticed, we've been able to use players off our practice squad that have been playing in our games, and they've been part of it. It's an expanded roster in the new format, and we're trying to take full advantage of that.
Jonathan Bullard. He stays or he goes, Dave? What were your thoughts
on that? I mean, he was just okay. I mean, he's one of those guys that up front, I mean, he had 2 tackles this year. And, you know, he played in, you know, 26% of the snaps defensively, you know, on certain plays, 35, 19%. He played in about 6 games. So, you know, nothing against him. I'm just saying that you can get guys like this. I'm not saying they're, you know, lining up on the sidewalks and you can just go out or pick one off
like
a tree
guards.
Or something like that.
Like guards.
Yeah, that's what the coach who said, I can get a bum off the highway to play guard. Get me a tackle. Yeah, that was Alex Gibbs. But it wasn't Alex Gibbs. It was the guy they got here from Denver who was a offensive line coach that had those good Denver running games. He was here for a little while. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, anyway, this is a guy who he's a space eater. He's, you know, and I saw him get some good bench press, you know, disrupt plays, things like that. But a couple quarterback hits from him, not a priority. Like, I would put DeMontre Moore as more of a priority. He's more special at what he does than what Jonathan Bullard does.
So he goes.
Yeah.
We got to
say go or keep.
They stay or they
okay,
go.
So,
they stay or they go. It's not none of this is personal.
Right.
This is just this is a business, Dave.
You got to
run
for
it like
three.
A business.
Yes, exactly.
So in today's batch of players, and again, we're going to do this every day and work our way through the list of the 24 unrestricted free agents. Through today's batch, 2 go, 1 stays, and that's DeMontre Moore. All right, coming up, Brady Henderson of ESPN.com will join us. Who does he think will be the next Seahawks offensive coordinator? We'll get his thoughts next year with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.